Paul, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Be really good to get to know a little bit about you and tell me about the business.
Okay. So thanks for the invite, first of all. My name's Paul Davis. I'm one of the SaaS partners at Retirement Capital. I've been involved in financial services more generally for the last 29 years, actually. I had a lot more hair and a lot less wrinkles when I started. So here I am. I started off in various financial advisory roles, got my financial services advice qualifications, FPC, CMAP, things like that. Eventually set up and run my own IFA practice, which I sold back in 2016. I've been this side of the fence as a SaaS consultant for the last 7 years, and it's been a real eye-opener, I must admit. As a very much a sort of generalist IFA, not really dealing with business owners greatly. It was more sort of retail clients. I think it's been a real eye-opener coming this side of the fence and seeing what is available, particularly around the world of SaaS pensions for company directors, all the benefits of flexibilities it gives them, tax planning opportunities, things like that, you know. So I'm really enjoying it.
For those people who are listening, watching, who don't really understand, can you just give an explanation as to what a SaaS is?
So a SaaS, small self-administered scheme, is a pension scheme designed for company directors. Company directors, their key employees, and also family members. So it's very much a bespoke pension arrangement. You have to be a company director in order to qualify. You have to have an active and trading limited company sat behind it.
Brilliant. Okay, so we hear a lot about SIPs, but of course SaaS seems to be more of a flexible pension, is that right?
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say it's been quite hidden over the years. SaaS is older than me, actually, which is hard to believe. I was born in 1974. The first SaaSes were set up in 1973. Wow. So it's been knocking around for 51 years. It's not really that well understood by professional advisors. A lot of accountants aren't familiar with it. A lot of financial advisors certainly aren't. I know I wasn't. So it really is quite a sort of specialist area. But I think it's very interesting for company directors to at least have a conversation around it and see if it's something that might benefit them.
They sound like quite useful tools. Who are the type of people who should have a SaaS?
Okay. So it's really, but it has to be company directors, first of all, as we've alluded to. Really anyone who's looking to take more control and have more flexibility over their retirement planning. If you're looking for fairly sort of vanilla investment funds and sort of steady eddy investments and things like that, then you're probably better off sticking to what's available in the retail market, you know. Okay. If you have your own sort of firm ideas around what you want to be investing in, all these particular tax planning opportunities around how you extract money from your limited company and can use that towards your retirement planning, then SaaS is perfect for those type of clients, you know. So I think it very much depends on the individual.
It sounds like you can invest in a larger variety of things then.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, I think what people would be familiar with is they may have a personal pension with a particular insurance company, Standard Life, Aviva, Nest.
All the big names.
You know, yeah. And that's fine, you know, not to sort of to knock anything people would have already set up there. But SaaS is a bit different. Mm. It's a bespoke arrangement. And really, it should be designed in consultation with you as the customer. And you should have your own sort of firm ideas about what you are looking to invest in. Maybe you've got an interest in property, for example, and you would have some ideas around that. But it's really having that conversation at the outset just to see if it is going to be suitable for you and will deliver exactly what you want it to, you know.
And that's absolutely brilliant in terms of particularly the property side of things. You know, as you can imagine, we get a lot of people who want to talk to us about investing in property in various forms, who either already have a SaaS or are looking into it. And when should they come and talk to you? And what would be appropriate?
Okay. So I think having the right guidance is key at outset, really. There's a number of sources of information. There's the good old internet. There's online forums, which are, there's lots of sort of SaaS-specific online forums that I see. I tend to hover in the background. I don't really say a lot. Some of the things that you see on there are quite frankly wrong. The people who are offering this guidance aren't qualified to do it, you know, and some of what they're saying you can do is quite scary, actually, and there could be massive repercussions. So I think having the right advice, the right guidance at the outset is key. Is SaaS going to do what you want it to, you know, in terms of your investment agenda, what type of investments you want to get involved in? Do you want to buy commercial property directly? Are you looking for a more sort of hands-off property investment? Or are you looking to do lots of other things, you know, whether it's sort of a range of different investment funds, or you might want to look at sort of cryptocurrency and things like that, you know, which comes with its own with its own risks, of course. But I think, you know, having that sort of conversation at the very start in terms of what you are you looking to achieve by setting up a SaaS is the start point, really, you know. Because while SaaS is a fantastic tool in the you know, for the right person, it's not going to be the cure for every sort of ill that's out there, you know. So
absolutely, and you certainly want to be able to work with someone who not necessarily hold your hand, but certainly be able to give you some pretty solid guidance on what is allowed and what isn't allowed, versus some other companies out there, for example, who I've known will set you up a scheme and allow you to set up a SaaS and then very much throw you into the wild and, you know, good luck to you. So sounds like you are more of a handholder.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it's having the right, it's having the sort of, it's being customer focused then, you know, sounds corny, but we wouldn't want to set, to go through the sort of the various hoops that we have to jump through to set up a SaaS, because it is quite complicated in terms of how we set up the SaaS and all the different sort of steps that we need to take to ensure a successful setup. But we don't want to go through all that pain and then leave you with a product that isn't going to offer you what you wanted to achieve at the outset, you know.
So you don't want to set one up and then realize right at the end of the road, actually, you can't do what you intended to do.
No, that's it. And I think what we tried to do as a business with Retirement Capital is have those difficult conversations at the very outset. And we actually record the calls as well. But I think it's a good reminder that we've had these conversations, and there are some fantastic opportunities around SaaS, around the investment side of it, the sort of the scope of investments you can get involved in and things like that. But we just have to be mindful of this HMRC rules sat behind this, and we do not want to fall foul of any of that, you know, because the penalties can be absolutely horrendous.
Absolutely. They have been known to pull the rug out from people in the past, haven't they? And, you know, certainly almost change the rules on a coin flip.
Yeah, we are, you know, and we've seen some of that, not us as a business, but we all sort of hear the horror stories of when it does go wrong, it goes horribly wrong. With Retirement Capital, we've been quite lucky in that we've started with a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. So we are aware of all the pitfalls that have happened in the past, and we just want to keep clients on the straight and narrow, offer them the maximum amount of flexibility that they can achieve, but not falling foul of HMRC along the way. And it's having that sort of balance, and I think that's important, you know.
And that's ideal, you know, keeping everyone safe and, on, like you said, on the right track and on the right path, but also allowing them the freedom to, you know, do hopefully what they want to or what they intend to do. In terms of the kind of clients you deal with, what is it most people like to invest in? You know, do they have a particular asset class they like or an investment strategy they tend to follow?
I think traditionally it was more people who were running a sort of family business, and they might own the premises that they operate from. The pension scheme could be set up. It could purchase the business premises and could inject some cash back into the business. That was your sort of traditional SaaS client then, you know.
Sure.
I think certainly over the last 5 or 6 years, it's changed. It's been more of a property focus, I think it's fair to say. There's been a lot of property investors, buy-to-let investors, people like that who are now sort of more in tune with SaaS pensions and what benefits that can provide. We have to be mindful in that sphere that it can't invest into residential property directly.
Okay.
If it could, we would open the floodgates and there would be, you know, we would be absolutely inundated with new SaaS schemes. But the rules are the rules, so to speak, you know. So you can't hold residential property directly, but there are a number of strategies you can utilize where funds can still be used in a more creative manner, shall we say, towards property investing and developing properties and things like that, you know.
Certainly we get, you know, a significant number of people speak to us about SaaS who are either in the early stages of either wanting to set up a SaaS or already have them. For those people who already have SaaS, they seem to use them for quite interesting ideas, actually. You know, with a variety of investment strategies. Some people are using them already to, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, loan money to their business to then buy and invest in property, you know, resi property.
Yes.
Is that a way to do things?
Yeah, it's a popular option. It's loan back is what we call it. So once we set up a SaaS and we get funds into it, then it has the potential to lend up to 50% of the value back to what we call the sponsoring employer.
Brilliant.
So back to the client's limited company. So that can be quite a good alternative source of funding. There are a few caveats around that. It has to be repaid over a 5-year period.
Okay.
You can set your own interest rate, providing it's a minimum of 1% above base.
Lovely.
And obviously any interest is effectively profit falling back into the pension scheme, you know.
So it's sort of from your business back to you anyway?
Yes, oh, it is.
Brilliant. Okay.
But that money then can be used by the limited company for whatever business purpose it sees fit, you know. So if the business activity is developing property, then money can be used for that, you know.
Brilliant. I know that will be, you know, that already is incredibly popular for people with SaaS. But I know, you know, now those people who are listening who didn't already know that will probably be thinking, right, okay, I can use my pension to invest in property whenever. That's good.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. And I think on the property side of things as well, it depends on the individual client and whether they want to be more sort of hands-on or hands-off in their approach, you know?
Yeah.
And I think with SaaS, it offers those two different sort of opportunities then, you know? You can buy property directly, mm-hmm. commercial property, so you can own outright the commercial property within the SaaS. Mm-hmm. You can even purchase part of a commercial property with the SaaS,
okay.
and you may want to finance the rest of it yourself personally, you know? So there's lots of flexibility if you wanted to go down that particular route. What we see quite a lot of now is people being more hands-off, mm-hmm. that they maybe want to loan some money to a trusted property developer,
mm-hmm.
And reap the returns on that over a sort of 2-3-5 year period then, you know?
Well, that is exactly what, you know, a lot of our clients choose to do, you know. They'll set up a SaaS with, you know, someone they know, trust, and, you know, hopefully will look after them along the way for usually, what, 20, 30 years, I think, people hold pensions for, SaaS pensions. But then what they'll often do is use their pension for a variety of asset class investments. You know, prime example, they might want to buy commercial premises for their business. If they've got funds left over, they'll probably be thinking, right, don't want to be sat in cash earning sub 1% these days. What can I do? That is a perfect example of when people choose to use us here at Acorn. Now, what we then tend to do is allow people to look at a range of investment options, but with SaaS specifically, allows them to invest in commercial property, but in a more passive way. We can offer a variety of returns and security and just allow people to ultimately passively grow their money whilst also hopefully using it as well for either their own business purpose or, you know, something they have a very keen interest in.
And I think people are quite sort of comfortable with property, aren't they, in terms of understanding it, understanding how a property can grow in value, particularly if it's refurbed or something like that, you know. There's planning gains to take into account. Lots of different ways that the investment can grow then, if you like.
And do you know what? Funnily enough, I'm seeing, when I'm talking to people, a lot of people seem to be buying their own commercial property through their pension. And they're utilizing sort of CMO-type structures within their, as an asset. Now, CMO, of course, as you probably know, is, you know, commercial multiple occupancy, so an office block, at which point they're using, you know, multiple businesses with, you know, hopefully 100% occupancy rate to, you know, fund their pension.
Yes.
Because then, you know, perhaps you can explain what then happens with any rental income or growth. How's that tax?
Well, interestingly, going back to that CMO strategy, we had a case recently, actually, and the unit at that particular time was used as a sort of beauty salon, like a nail bar and things like that. I wouldn't know much about about this, a nail bar, hairdressers, but it was sort of revamped into a barber's,
okay,
with five chairs that were available for rent.
Sure.
So I think the rent was something like £500 a week in its former sort of format then, you know, as a nail bar type scenario. But now it's generating £200 a week per chair.
Wow.
And there's five chairs. So that property, just by being sort of repurposed and you're used slightly differently, is generating so much more rental income as a result, you know.
Brilliant.
And just something as simple as that, really, where you change the purpose of it and you increase the amount of rent that's coming in. The rent would go into the pension scheme, mm-hmm, into the SAS. So it's as tax efficient as you can get, really. You know, it grows tax-free. You will pay tax when you draw benefits, although you can take a proportion tax-free. But it's a very, very tax-efficient way of saving for the future, really, you know.
Brilliant.
If you cut it down to sort of the brass tacks then, you know.
So the rental income can go back into the pension scheme entirely tax-free?
Yes.
Brilliant. And then any growth within the pension as well, within the SAS, is also tax-free, is that right?
Yeah, and what you're doing then as well, you're building up a tax for, a cash pot.
Sure.
So at some point in the future, you will be able to go again. Or you might want to redevelop the property that you already own. Or you may want to do a sort of a more passive investment with Acorn or whoever, you know. But you've always got options there. And you've, with that money coming in, you're always going to have options further down the line in terms of diversifying your portfolio or buying more property, whatever your preference, you know.
Honestly, that's amazing, because it is typically the type of people we talk to have got a huge range and, you know, diverse portfolio, particularly within their pension, whether it's, you know, sat in a SIP prior to a transfer or, you know, moving into a SAS to look at diversifying further. You know, the prime example I see when we're talking to people here at Acorn, because of course we are property focused, so there is that bias in terms of property there, is what we see is a huge number of people who typically love property will, for example, loan money to their limited company to develop properties, to buy and add value, to buy to lets and things like that, with a view to then pull equity out, refinance, and all of that fund structuring. But then with the other half of their money, typically park it again in property with us here at Acorn, or diversify that remaining 50%, some with Acorn, of course, some put it into gold and precious metals.
Yes.
You then got stocks, shares, bonds, all of that. So huge range of things people can do.
And I think that's the beauty of SAS, you know, the fact that it's sort of steered by you as the individual. So if you prefer property, then you've got all the different options around property, whether you want to own property yourself, whether you want to hand it off and have a more passive investment, but also those further opportunities to diversify if you wanted to, you know. But the key thing is it's very much driven by you.
Yeah.
You have the control, you have the flexibility, you know. And I think control and flexibility are the two big things around SaaS, you know. If you're not looking for control and flexibility, then stick with Aviva, for example, you know. But if you are looking for that control, and let's face it, I think a lot of people who run their own business like being in control anyway.
Of course.
That's probably why they are running their own business.
Generally quite good at it as well.
Yeah, but that's it, you know. And so I think that's why SaaS is quite appealing for that particular segment, you know.
So in terms of that then, you're running your business, you're obviously very successful, one hopes you certainly will be in the future. You look to set up a SaaS pension. You can make pension contributions, can't you?
Yes.
And move money from your business into a SaaS. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so there's some quite generous tax reliefs available. Mm. It's actually gone up. It was £40,000 a year as an annual allowance.
You can contribute
per annum on an annual basis. It's gone up to £60,000 now. So that's a good start point. You know, there's £60,000 in each tax year that potentially you could pay into a pension.
And that's per person?
Per person.
Wow.
You can also go back an additional 3 years and pay in any unused allowance that you didn't take advantage of at the time. So the potential is there to make some hefty contributions. If the company is in a position to do that. If you have a profitable limited company, then often one of the problems you've got is how do you extract profit from the company without being hammered with tax?
By our friends at the Remedy.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the most sort of tax-efficient ways of extracting profit from a limited company is via a pension contribution.
Wow.
Particularly if that contribution goes into a SaaS pension, because it's then under your control and you have all the flexibility that goes with it. So whilst you're aiming for retirement, whenever that may be.
Or never at all.
Die with your boots on and all that, you know. But it might seem a long way off, but you can certainly accumulate quite an asset there that you can sort of steer, you can chop and change, you can invest, so it is going to provide a decent sum should you choose to retire in the future.
That's great. And one of the things, as some people choose to do, is almost use their SaaS as like a living inheritance, if you will, you know, because you can have up to 11 members on a scheme, can't you? And you can choose not to draw money out of your pension. And so can you pass that on? How does that work?
Yeah, I think it's the sort of like a life cycle of SaaS, really, that it tends to start off with one or two members, a husband and wife, co-directors, for example.
Sure.
As assets start to build and contributions drop into the scheme, then it tends to morph into something more than, if you like. It almost becomes a family trust.
Wow.
You can bring in children further down the line. And we see it a lot, you know, where assets build up. And they can actually cascade into the future generations then, but also free of tax. So no inheritance tax, no capital gains tax. You can just pass these assets from one generation to the next.
That's pretty incredible, especially when, you know, at the moment you're looking at inheritance tax sitting at 40%.
Yes.
It's a big chunk to take off an estate.
It is. So we see a lot of that, you know, as the scheme matures, that it does morph into this family trust scenario, and that's powerful, you know?
Absolutely. Gosh, you know, it sounds incredibly appealing. You know, who shouldn't have a SaaS? You've heard of all the positives. What would you say is the type of person you shouldn't have one?
No, I think that's a good question, and I think if you look at some of the online forums, they would have you believe that every business owner should have a SaaS, and that's simply not true, you know? It has to be right for the individual. I've mentioned control and flexibility. To me, that's an advantage. To a lot of people, it might not. It might scare them, the life out of them, to think that they will have to control their investments.
To actually get involved.
That they will have to roll their sleeves up. They will have to make their own investment decisions. They will have to seek some professional advice in terms of where they're investing, And for a lot of people, that is not what they're looking for, you know. And that's where the likes of your sort of personal pensions with, I don't work for Aviva, by the way, with Aviva or Standard Life or whoever, they're probably better off staying there, you know. But if you are, if control and flexibility are important, then certainly SaaS is worthy of a conversation at the very least.
Brilliant.
I think if you've got a firm idea at the back end in terms of what sort of assets you are looking to invest in, what sort of strategies you are looking to deploy, then we can sort of thrash that out and make sure that it is going to achieve what you want.
So talk to you right at the front end, come up with certainly a good idea of a strategy and what somebody wants to do, then hopefully put that into practice, or in fact be told, actually, this probably isn't quite the right thing for you.
No, exactly that. And I think it's having those sort of in-depth discussions at the very start of the process. Yeah. What we do is we offer all clients, a SaaS or potential clients, a SaaS discovery call.
Okay.
So it's a 45-minute recorded call with the likes of myself or my colleagues, just to discuss it in more detail. What are they looking to achieve? What is their current situation? Is SaaS going to work for them? What questions do they have? Get all the sort of all the questions and answers out of the way at the very start, and just make sure if the client does proceed, then we know that it's going to deliver exactly what they want. You know, there's nothing worse than sort of jumping through all these hoops and getting this bespoke pension arrangement set up, and then
just to be told at the end, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, and I mean that's disappointment for the client, and ultimately it's disappointing for us as well, because we don't want unhappy clients, you know. So those conversations at the very start, I think it's important, you know.
Just to touch on what you said in terms of, you know, taking that control, you know, having flexibility within a SaaS, doesn't mean a person has to be involved doing, you know, heaps of paperwork, does it? You know, they have to be, you know, perfectly active every minute of every day. They can simply buy their asset class and leave it if they so wish.
Yeah, that's it. And I think that's very much down to the individual, you know. But I think even some seasoned property professionals, you know, I think it's nice sometimes to have that sort of hands-on and hands-off. So they might have a project that they're running themselves. Let's say it's an upgrade to a commercial property, for example. But they might have some funds sitting in cash, and they think, well, there's a particular property developer I know and trust. I will loan them X amount for 12 months for X return, and I'm quite comfortable to do that, you know, rather than just leave some of the cash languishing in deposit accounts, you know.
And that would be a perfect example of when to speak to Acorn.
Yes.
Because what you could choose to do is, let's say you own your... Let's use your commercial property as an example. It's for your business, it's paying rental income, and it's accruing funds within your pension. And at some point, what you'll probably see is actually there's a large cash deposit building, which you're not then using, which you're not sure what to do with it. Well, come and speak to us here at Acorn, because what you could choose to do is just park it with us for a period of time, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, whatever you choose to do. We can give you a return on your investment. Because at the end of the day, you don't want a pension sat in cash. It's not what they're designed for.
No.
And so to be able to have it sat growing passively without any major involvement is hugely appealing for a number of people.
Yes.
Now you get some good security, and it allows people to know that actually these guys know what they're doing. They've been around for around 30 years. They're not running away anytime soon. And you know, ultimately, it's growing their pension, their wealth and their legacy, you know, which is ultimately why people use pensions, right?
Yes. And I think people generally like fixed return investments,
so,
you know, where if they know it's going to be there for 12 months, 18 months, and I'm going to have this back at the end of it, you know. And I think that's the other thing, quite a big consideration for clients as well, is security.
Yeah.
You know, and I know it's something you guys are big on, but having decent security backing up the investment as well. Because I think sometimes we can all be sort of bamboozled by headline figures and things like that. But you just want to know that there's a good track record of investing there And ultimately, if anything ever did go wrong, there's appropriate security to back it up, you know?
Completely agree there. And funnily enough, something we've seen in industry is the use of jargon just to complicate investments for clients. It's incredibly frustrating from our side when you're professional and you're trying to protect clients, because often you'll hear the word first charge bandied around. That's very, very common in the property sector. Now, what a lot of people often say when it comes to first charges, but there are actually a couple of types. You've got a fixed first charge, which is as most people know it, but then you've also got something called a floating first charge, which is also known as a debenture. And it's often called a floating fixed charge, or, you know, sometimes just called a first charge, fixed charge, whatever you want to call it. And it confuses people, and yes, actually perhaps isn't quite the first charge security they were hoping it was.
No.
So it's just about, you know, really digging into the details of, you know, how are you protecting your pension and your legacy? Now, just to add to that, we're talking as if all of our clients have got millions and millions of pounds and everything's golden, which isn't always the case for everybody. You know, sometimes people have, you know, 100,000, a couple of 100,000 pounds in their pension. And sometimes they're of an age where actually they need to draw on their income. And quite often when it comes to us speaking to those people, we can still help, because there are various investments we have which will offer a quarterly return for people who actually need to draw on their pension and, you know, still live their life. So that's, you know, we can accommodate for people in that situation, and it's absolutely something we can talk about.
Yeah, and I think in the life cycle of pensions more generally, it's initially that sort of accumulation phase where you're building funds up. And if anyone ever does retire these days, I think it's more like a sort of more of a flexible arrangement these days. But that you've got that sort of deaccumulation phase where you start drawing money from the scheme, but also you still keep money invested with a view to protecting the value for as long as possible, then, you know, and whether you get to spend it. I mean, certainly that would be my the driving factor for me.
You can't take it with you.
No, but you can pass it to the children as well, you know. And I think that would probably be attractive for the children more than myself. But it's good to sort of maintain the value and have an asset that you can pass down generations as well, you know.
And that's hugely popular when it comes to legacy planning for a lot of people. Being able to pass that on with no inheritance tax, like we've already said, it's just appealing for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's massive.
They might otherwise have cash sat in their business, and when they perhaps don't make it all the way to the finish line as expected, you know, there are some pretty nasty tax bills.
I think that's the other thing with SaaS as well, is that it runs in tandem with the business. You have to have a business at outset to qualify to set up a SaaS, for want of a better word. But it can maintain that relationship with your limited company through the life cycle of the pension. If you think about loan backs and things like that, you know, if you wanted money to purchase a property, then you've got an asset there you can use. You might want to loan money to the limited company to fund expansion or something like that. Then it's an alternative source of finance as well, you know.
And can you have multiple businesses attached to a SaaS?
Yeah, you can. You can adhere more than one company to a SaaS.
Brilliant. So if you've got a group structure, for example, you could add each of them, you know, several businesses.
You can.
And you can make contributions from each.
You can, yeah.
Oh, and then you can loan the money back to each, can you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it can be structured and linked to various companies within the group then, you know.
Oh, okay. So it's used from just a small fledgling business all the way up to a large group structure.
Yes.
Wow, okay. That's good.
Very flexible.
So in terms of SaaS, and, you know, I'm asking you how long a piece of string is now, what do you think is coming in the future of SaaS, and, you know, what's on the landscape and the horizon?
I think if we rewind back over the last sort of 2 or 3 years, there's been some quite major changes, really. I think the thing is with SaaS is the flexibility is important. It's one of the main selling points in terms of having a SaaS. Sure. But I think sometimes it can create its own problems as well. And I think it's fair to say over the years, SaaS has been sort of used and sometimes abused. particularly around sort of investments and things like that, you know. So the rules have tightened up over the last couple of years, particularly around sort of transfers coming into a SAS pension.
So that's their existing pensions being moved into a SAS?
Yes.
Okay.
So now you have to prove that there's a payroll link to the limited company. So you have to have 3 months' pay slips to show that you are actually employed and receive income.
So you didn't just set it up that day then?
That's it. And I think that was the problem, you know, is that certain SaaS providers were exploiting SaaS.
Right.
You could set up a SaaS one day and have all the flexibility the next, without there being a sort of bona fide company sat behind it, you know.
Right.
Those days have gone, and I think that's better for the whole industry, really, you know, is that the right people are setting up SaaS for the right reasons, you know.
Brilliant.
So it's not going to be used and abused. So that's important. I think we'll probably see more legislation maybe along those lines as we progress. But I think as long as we are talking to the right people and we are doing it for the right reasons and we're not purely being led by a particular investment agenda, then we'll be absolutely fine, you know. But I think those elements of control or flexibility are still the main reasons why people want to look at SaaS, you know, and that's important to them. And hopefully that will continue for the foreseeable future. And if it's not going to achieve what you want it to, well, what have we wasted? We've wasted maybe a 40-minute conversation, and at least at the end of it, you know that it's not going to achieve what you wanted it to. On the flip side, it could be exactly what you're looking for.
Of course.
You know, but not to be too negative. But just have that conversation, have the right guidance at the very start, speak to the right people, you know, because there is a lot of duff information out there, and sure, just make sure you're having it from a good source, you know.
I couldn't agree more with you. You know, when we're speaking to people and they're saying, oh, I can do all these weird and wonderful things with the SaaS, and you're sat there thinking, actually, you shouldn't do that. That's the last thing you should be doing, or you'll get a nasty fine from the revenue. You know, you need to be talking to professionals, really.
But I think, you know, we're always looking for solutions at the end of the day to particular problems or particular scenarios, but it has to fall within the rules defined by HMRC. And we know, not how far we can push it, that's the wrong word, but we know what we can do
to overcome the obstacles.
Yes, and where nobody's going to sort of fall foul of HMRC. Nobody wants that. We certainly don't want it, and the client shouldn't want it either, you know, because some of the penalties for getting it wrong can be massive, you know. But there are some novel solutions out there, some interesting ideas, particularly around sort of investments, property purchase, things like that. Tax planning is a big side of it as well. And just having the right sort of a conversation with the right person who's got that knowledge is key, I think, you know.
Brilliant. I think those who have surplus capital within their SaaS or within their business should definitely reach out to us here at Acorn, and we can certainly look to help people, point them in a direction if they're still unsure about SaaS or where to go, or indeed any type of investment. We can certainly point people in a direction. So, Paul, that's been absolutely wonderful. Thanks for joining us today.
That's okay. Thanks for the invite. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, look, that's great. So us here at Acorn, thanks very much.
Cheers.